This is Scenic Roots. I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for joining us. How can a theater help build community for people on the autism spectrum, the neurodivergent, and what can those people teach the theater? These questions are at the heart of a collaboration between the Chattanooga Autism Center and Ensemble Theater of Chattanooga. Alice Benson is clinic director at the Autism Center, and Gary Posey is founder of Ensemble Theater. Gary, Alice, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having us, Ray.
Thank you.
Tell us more about this collaboration.
About 4 years ago, ETC produced a play that the protagonist was a person on the autistic spectrum. And so I went over to the Autism Center and sat down with Alice and a colleague of hers. And for about 90 minutes, got a crash course in what ASD or the autism spectrum disorder was or is and how it's come about so that I would be a little bit more prepared in how to present it on stage as the director of the production. That led to us holding auditions at the Autism Center for artists who are on the spectrum. We ended up casting a few, and then Alice and I just were like, we want to do more. So that kind of developed into the Spectrum Playhouse over time.
To add to what Gary said, he reached out to get more information and understanding about autism. So we enjoyed sitting down with him and teaching him about autism and what that looks like and individuals, adults, and children. He didn't think he knew anyone that was on the spectrum, but in talking about it, he began to think about people he had worked with previously.
Right. I was going to piggyback on that. One of the benefits of working with people who identify or have been diagnosed as being on the autistic spectrum seem to bring others out of the woodwork that we had been working with that had not given us that information before. And so it started to really, enlighten us who are not on the spectrum, or what we're neurotypical is what we're called, as opposed to neurodiverse. And so it really kind of enlightened us in how we could better collaborate with people who are on the spectrum and work with them. So when people started coming out of the woodwork, as it were, it was just a nice kind of like, oh, so it makes so much sense now. There's so many things that really come into perspective with the knowledge that I had just gained and with working with individuals who are on the spectrum.
The first collaboration was around having a play.
Right. We were trying to develop a devised piece about the autistic community in Chattanooga. And we were like about 2 weeks away from opening when COVID shut us down last year. So I had interviewed about 6 or 7 different artists on the spectrum and sort of got their stories and then developed a piece that was sort of interactive. And then we were staging that as sort of a launch for the Spectrum Playhouse. That has been put on hold subsequently. And then the camp is where we're moving towards now. But then it's also, that's kind of been changed, because it's just ever evolving as we try to figure out how to navigate the world amidst the pandemic and the not pandemic.
And then what does this camp at this point in time look like?
So we're looking at having something that's after school or in the evenings, one day a week for about 10 weeks for individuals, school age kids between 10 and 18, where they would come for camp to learn social skills, but also have the opportunity to interact with other kids who have been diagnosed with autism, all through doing theater activities and in making it fun and very interactive.
Right. So there's several different models that we have based sort of our curriculum on that use theater and creative performance to help with children or anyone really who is on the autistic spectrum, who has been diagnosed on the autistic spectrum. And then it also helps, I think, flip side, there's a greater plus for those of us who need to understand too what they're dealing with and how they're dealing with what they're dealing with and how better we can communicate with them. And so that process is, we're just trying to take that model and create something that sort of allows us to develop the talent that already exists naturally in individuals diagnosed with autism so that we can pull them into the artistic community instead of having them feel like they are excluded, which is part of the problem that I think Alice has told me that they feel through her work at the Autism Center.
Yeah, there's oftentimes individuals feel like they don't fit in or don't belong or aren't accepted because of differences. And so this is more an opportunity to allow for individuals to be themselves in a safe environment while learning skills as well. and be able to have fun within that and have a community mm-hmm. from that.
Right. And the goal, the eventual goal will be to have a performance that develops out of these classes, these weekly sessions. And we had planned that with a camp this summer, but again, just not sure what was going on and some promotional, you know, just mishaps on our part. So that's when we're sort of transitioning to the class, the weekly class, and then we'll do that for the fall and the spring and then launch the camp in the summer of next year.
What's an example of an exercise, a strategy that brings the theater world to these children, opens the door to that world to these children, and includes them in other ways?
Right. So I think the biggest strategy is the fact that we'll have a mentor program. So there'll be a mentor who will be with the student for the entirety of the class, right? Assigned to that student for the entirety of the duration of the class. And so first of all, right there, it creates a partnership. They have to work together with this person, which allows the one person, the neurotypical person, to learn how to do the art with a neurodiverse individual. And the neurodiverse individual doesn't feel as if they are having to be hindered by their neurodiversity. Do you know what I'm saying? That's the first step, is that you create this partnership and this trust. And then that trust then hopefully generates to a stronger sense in a bigger group, right? Great example is we had cast an eight-year-old in a musical that we did a couple of years ago that we met through working with the Autism Center, Noah Phillips, and his family came to the first read-through, sit-through, sing-through, and afterwards they're like, yeah, Gary, I don't think this is going to work. We'll stick with it, but his attention span and his behavior and yada, yada, yada. And I'm like, just let me try. Let me try. And by the end of that experience with Noah, his family had learned so much about him and how he can fit in to the big group, the bigger group like that, and work together. And then all of us in the cast learned how we could work with Noah. And it really helped both of us. So it created this really beautiful friendship, relationship between Noah's family and ETC that has since continued. And now Noah likes to tell me what we're doing each season. He likes to brief me on what ETC should produce. You know, which is great. You know, we have meetings. We do Skype.
I think he's the co-director.
He pretends he is. And I let him because he's very intelligent.
You've mentored him into a consultant at a young age, Gary.
I created a monster. not at all. No, we love Noah, and he's brought so much to what we do. And it really, I look at the experience personally as just really opening my eyes and sort of changing my focus. I mean, I've always thought theater is meant to change people. It's meant to affect. And working with Noah and that whole thing is just really sort of, and then developing the play that got cut off last year. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was just, again, it was just for me, it's just been very eye-opening and very rewarding. And so I want to share that experience with the greater community.
What's the timeline?
We're looking at starting September
13th.
And I said 10 weeks before, but it'll be 8 weeks. And it'll be after school, so
Mondays
4:30 to 6:30
at Barking Legs. Yeah.
And for people who want more information, if they want to sign up, where can they go online?
They can get more information on our website, so that's ChattanoogaAutismCenter.org, or they can email with any questions as well to get the link to sign up. The email is info@ChattanoogaAutismCenter.org.
Or they can just Facebook message me or send ETC a message and I'll get it to the right person.
All right. Gary, Alice, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Also, the Chattanooga Autism Conference will be held next month in person at the Chattanooga Convention Center. More information at ChattanoogaAutismCenter.org/conference. This summer, students from the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill came to Chattanooga to study its role as a smart city. The Moorhead Kane Scholars, who were hosted by the Enterprise Center, examined tech projects here, including from UTC's Center for Urban Informatics and Progress. Now, meet the students who stopped by our studio a few weeks ago.
My name's Elia Musia, and I am currently the class of 2024 rising sophomore at UNC.
My name is Emily Schmidt. I am also a part of the class of 2024. We're all in the same class. My name's Nina Fisher, also class of 2024.
My name is Matthew Dew, and I'm a rising sophomore at UNC Chapel Hill.
My name is Emerson Hauser. I'm in the class of 2024 at the University of North Carolina.
Welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Tell us more about what brought you here to Chattanooga.
So all of us are Morehead Cain Scholars at the University of North Carolina. And through our scholarship, we do a summer called Civic Collab, where we go, you know, one of the cities throughout the U.S., there was about 12 or 13, and we got placed in Chattanooga. So the prompt that we were given when we came here was inclusive innovation districts. So we came to work with the Enterprise Center to analyze their work and talk with stakeholders, you know, in the Smart City Collaborative and these initiatives and see how we can honestly make it more inclusive. So our work has been composed of interviewing people and seeing what we can learn from them and how to better approach this idea of inclusive innovation districts.
You all looked at the impact of technology on health. Tell us more about what you focused on.
The main things that we were looking into the concept of a smart city, is how to make it more efficient and really just enhance the lives of people who live here. So looking into health specifically, I'm a public health management major, so that was a big area of interest for me. And I was looking at how the infrastructure in Chattanooga can help further health measures. So in the future, there's a really big opportunity to head into telehealth, and it saves people a lot of money. It's a lot more efficient, and it's safer for a lot of people. And because of the broadband network here, there's just a lot of opportunity, and Chattanooga has the capacity to enter into that space. And then there's also the test bed on Martin Luther King. And so that has air quality sensors, and there's a lot of research going on there that can look at and examine health measures due to air quality. And so there's also a large avenue there that Chattanooga can head into.
To the others in the group, what are some of the things that you learned in conducting these interviews and pursuing this goal?
So I think one of the first things that we learned, just hearing from different people talking about what a smart city means and what that phrase, that buzzword that's used so commonly here in Chattanooga, what that means to people who live here, is that everyone had a different definition of that term. We asked people how they would define it, and everyone said something different, everyone ranging from like everyday community members to CEOs of companies who work in that space. No one had a set concrete definition of what that meant. So that sort of spurred a big portion of our project. We decided to create a common vocabulary for these terms that people keep using here in Chattanooga yet don't know what they mean. So we defined what a smart city was and placed that on a citizen's guide. So we figured that if people don't even know what the term smart city means, then it's unlikely that they know about the smart city work that's happening.
One thing we definitely noticed is that when you hear the term smart city, your first instinct is to think tech and big data and all of that and see how that ties into decision making. But one thing we really noticed is that smart cities are about much more than just data. It's a lot about being collaborative with other members in the community. We have a large number of nonprofits and big stakeholders such as EPB, the Enterprise Center, and many, many others. And we wanted to make sure that when we crafted the Citizens Guide, that there's such an emphasis on being more than data and the many programs going on and how that all ties together so that we can have a true smart community, not just big tech.
Yeah, and to go off of that, one thing that was very apparent was that just like the Chattanooga way and having all these partnerships in the area, we really came to the conclusion that that's like one of the big advantages that Chattanooga has is the ability of people to collaborate in the space. And the partnerships are really one of Chattanooga's key strengths and really the collaboration and willingness of people to just always work towards a better smart city has been something that I thought was very interesting about this place.
There was a particular emphasis with your work on health. We've talked about the technology, we've talked about the partnerships, but talk about how you saw them leveraged here and what lessons you drew from that.
I think the main thing that I took away from it is just having a community focus. So we talked to a lot of community health centers, a lot of nonprofits that really work with people in different areas of the city. And so learning about those initiatives, it was really crucial for me that I know I'll take back is just like, you have to have a community focus of anything that you do, especially around health, because you're working with people, you're affecting people's lives. And so that was super interesting. We also got to look at the other side of things with the smart city infrastructure. Health was more of a future aspect that we were looking at and areas that we could go into, but we were looking at the programs right now. And I think aside from health, it's just the way that things in the community affect people's lives right now, which has better outcomes regardless.
And I would say with a community focus, the biggest thing that we honestly took away is talking to those members of the community who will be the most impacted by these changes. whether those may be, you know, through the test bed or other projects that are going on through smart city initiatives. Looking at those typically marginalized individuals throughout our communities and not leaving them behind, because with so much future outlook and so much technology that is really going to build up Chattanooga and push it into the future, you cannot leave those core members of the community that have been left behind in the past. So whether that be going out, like what we were trying to do, is provide them with a guide to explore the city and learn about the city and how they can take advantage of the opportunities and resources around them, or whether that's even just, you know, talking to them to the community. What do you want? What do you want to see? Because ultimately, you know, we are doing this for the people of Chattanooga, not necessarily for the companies or the profit or the gain, but improving the lives of those people who call Chattanooga and, you know, Hamilton County home. You know, that's the ultimate goal of the smart city, and how we achieve that is really, really key, especially with just looking at these members of the community.
What are some things that you learned here that deepened your sense of what we call the digital divide and ways to bridge it?
I think one of the most interesting things was, I mean, we talked about this a little bit already, is just that people are often unaware of a lot of the programs that are around them. We learned about a program, Tech Goes Home, which works to bridge this digital divide that you were just talking about, you know, providing technological resources for underserved households. And what's really important is making the smart city space more inclusive. And if we're able to invite those people into the space, then they can take advantage of the opportunities that are here that often aren't always communicated as best as they could be. And once we're able to inform people about them, then hopefully that can bridge the divide in the future.
And I would say with programs, Tech Goes Home and EPB, those who are doing the house spots throughout the city, I think COVID really showed the need for those programs, especially with, you know, a lot of students and kids being online, exploited so many other issues behind that, whether that may be food insecurity or inability to learn, even online. So I think COVID really showed that the need for those, and programs, like I said, Tech Goes Home and EPB are really strong members of the community, are really making that a better place for everybody. And I think that's honestly where we need to have a lot of focus, because, you know, that's the youth, you know, the future of the city, the people we want to come back and not necessarily leave. So I think that was really key, what they were doing.
Yeah, and I'd also add that it became really evident that there is a digital divide. And I think that's something that people don't really realize, because it seems like everyone has internet nowadays. And another huge thing that we learned and that we talk to a lot of people about is that internet is a utility. It's not just a luxury at all, because you really can't be a functioning member without it, and everyone needs it. And so that became super evident. And it's good to see that people are recognizing that shift and are recognizing how important it is. And so that was a huge takeaway for me, is that really it is a utility and everyone deserves it. And you can't just leave people behind to fend for themselves without internet access.
What's next for you as scholars in this program and as students at UNC?
I think we'll definitely be back here. I'm looking forward to coming here, hopefully in the fall. I'm definitely more interested in the smart city public service area of work now. I was previously passionate about the type of volunteering, but never in the smart city space. So definitely possibly as a career in the future for me. But really, it's just been an interesting experience. I never would have thought Chattanooga was like this. Really a revealing experience for me.
I would say that this definitely opens my eyes to not just the smart city work that's going on, but just bridging the digital divide in our own communities. We're all from very different areas, and realizing what's going on in Chattanooga and how we can take small things that happen here, like Tech Goes Home, like this fiber internet, and taking that lessons back to our community and back to Chapel Hill to make sure, because we have very similar issues with people not having internet access. So we can take the lessons learned here and go back and try and make more meaningful change. And hopefully this gets the ball rolling on the conversation about the importance of digital equity in the world.
Yeah, I think I'm looking forward to, again, taking all the things that we've learned. One super cool thing for me about this summer and the time here is just like how cities work and how people interact with each other. And I learned a lot about that. And it's something that you don't realize living in your own city. I feel like I learned more about Chattanooga than I did in my own home for all my years living there. And so next summer, we have the opportunity to explore our own internships, or we can travel globally. And so that's something I'll definitely think about when I'm looking for jobs next summer. And I've really valued the experience that I got while I was here.
I think this experience for all of us really helped like our career development and us figuring out what we want to do like in life past college. Because all of us, we have majors, we're studying things, but I don't necessarily know what I want to do yet. And working here in Chattanooga with all of these incredible nonprofits, especially people at the Enterprise Center, has showed me that it's okay to not know what I want to do now and that I can do a lot of things with the degree that I choose. I'm really excited about that.
Going into a field, you know, I want to do public health entrepreneurship. And that's a big field. You know, you have a lot of previous people, stakeholders, and big companies already in the field that are not really making public health or just health in general or healthcare even inclusive and accessible for a lot of people. So I think using what we've learned here, learning about these divides and these inequalities that are, you know, in these communities, I think going forward, I want to, you know, build a career around focusing on how to alleviate and build stronger relationships between partnerships throughout the city, whether it be public and private, to further address these issues that these, you know, marginalized historically communities are facing, hopefully in public health, but, you know, eventually move on to fields such as education and, you know, food insecurity and, you know, just finding ways, like they say, the Chattanooga way, those partnerships to all come together to actually address these issues, because I think that's what makes Chattanooga so special, the partnerships between the government and then private entities and then, you know, nonprofits such as like the Enterprise Center, all of them working together to actually make meaningful and impactful change. And you actually see that, whether that be Tech Goes Home or whatever program, you know, the fiber infrastructure. They've all done truly great work in this city, which I plan to learn and take on in my future. So really thankful for all of that.
I would like people in the community to know that the term smart city actually has a meaning behind it for them, especially in Chattanooga. And there's a lot of different avenues that that takes. And there's a lot of resources that people can use. And that's something that we were able to learn about. That's just what we really want people to know, is that the things happening here actually do affect you and they do impact you. It doesn't mean you have to care about it, but it's cool to know. And it's something that can help you connect with your city. So I would just say, like, continue to look for resources. And if you're interested, definitely look into things, because there's a lot that you can learn. And there's a lot of good stuff happening here.
And be part of that change. Get involved as soon as possible, whether that, you know, as big or small as you want to be, you know, whether that publicly, through a company, or just in your own communities. We encourage you guys to truly get involved, because this really is the future of yourselves and, you know, upcoming generations. The only way to, you know, see change is to become part of that change itself. So we truly encourage you guys and everyone to get involved in, you know, in your local communities, big or small.
All right. Look forward to having you back. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to Scenic Roots. More in a moment.
This is Scenic Roots this afternoon from the Isis Music Hall in Asheville. This is South for Winter. According to their bio, in 2014, guitarist Nick Stone, who's from New Zealand, and singer Danny Ciccone from Colorado, met as volunteers building greenhouses in South America. They wrote their first song together on a Peruvian rooftop. Called Fallen Seeds, it was later released as their first single. After moving to Nashville, they met cellist and singer Alex Trudell, and they became the trio you're about to hear from the Isis Music Hall. This is South for Winter.
Thank you so much, everyone. How are we doing? Good. We're stoked to be here. Thank you all so much.
So this track's called All We Have, which right now is the instruments you see on stage in that beautiful white van outside. And of course some merch if you would like to buy some of that at the end of the show. We do have that at the back as well.
This song became all the more real during COVID this year. Basically, the idea behind it is being happy with just the life you lead and the ones you love, and it took on a whole new meaning, but we're just so happy to be here with you guys, so thanks so much for coming out. Thanks to everyone who's tuning in on the live stream as well. This song is called All We Have.
All we have is what we need. Where the sky touches the sea, we walk a line. We walk a line. All we have are grains of sand falling through these open hands. You can't rewind the hourglass of time. Thank you. we've seen, and those new mad places we've been. So do we know much of anything? But if this is all we'll have, paths to walk with no going back. If this is all we'll have, well, it's enough for us.
Our music as happy folk and murder ballads. So this is your first murder ballad. This song is called Devil is a Calling.
Take it away, Alex.
Thank you. the devil by the tree. Didn't know where it would lead.
A track called All I Want to Do.
Lives. to choose. We've got nothing but time to lose. All I want to do, baby, is love.
Much, guys. So we're going to stick with a bit of a murder ballad theme here. This track is called 10 Black Crows. We actually got given a skeletal crow at a gig once, which we named Ernie. Don't ask me why, but he's traveling in the front of the van these days. He's our little pet Ernie. All right.
So if you see a van with a weird skeleton, it's not a real skeleton. It's just a toy.
It's not?
It's not a real skeleton, Nick.
What? Well, that's news. That's news to me. We should send it back.
But this song is called 10 Black Crows, and as you're listening to the song, picture a desert. I'm from Colorado, so I like to picture the Colorado desert in the 1800s. Big empty desert and just a train screaming through this desert and a lone horseman traveling behind the train.
Thank you.
rise till hell came down in a cloud of dust. Ain't no way to run from a quick shot with a loaded gun. And he stood and watched the sky run red. And that happened now, he said, as ten black crows circled overhead, single bullet left any last request. Ten black crows circled overhead, any final word, just what the gunman said.
That's where he'll be.
Take him down to the hangman's tree. Oh, take him down. Take him down to the hangman's tree.
Guys, so much. And as promised, it's time for some happy folk. And we're also going to make Alex do some singing. So we didn't even know he could sing for a while, but
yes,
he kept telling us, he was like, no, I'm just a cellist. I can't, it's the intonation. I've got to focus on playing. And I was like, no, we'll just chuck you on the guitar then. So he had no excuse after that. Jack of all trades, right?
Little do they know. Little do they know I've paid the sound guy to just turn my mic off.
So we actually found a nicer way to say happy folk and murder ballads. We did release our debut album during the pandemic. Great idea. But it's out there, and we did it, and people have been really nice, which has been great. But we named it Luxumbra, which is Latin for light and shadow.
People might have a little more time to listen to music as well during the pandemic. So, you know, it was a gamble.
Right. We do have the album out in the world, though, Luxumbra, and this is Deluxe.
The Lux.
The Lux.
The light. Gotcha. Oh, that's what Lux means. Okay. Gotcha.
All right, Alex, you ready? We got to amp him up a little bit. He still gets nervous. We're in front of the mic.
Cool.
Ready?
Yeah, ma'am.
One, two, three. Oh, my love, when I lose my hold, when my eyes forget their youth, when the wind's worn down the bones, oh, there's always you.
One, two.
And when the velvet skies go cold, when the stars fade out too soon, when I wake and fear a ghost, oh, there's always you.
From the Isis Music Hall in Asheville, that was South for Winter.
Thank you.
Here on Scenic Roots on listener-supported public radio from Chattanooga.